Podcast. This is Volume 9, Issue 424, and we're going to be covering three games today that are all add-ons to a game that we've already covered. We are covering Shovel Knight, Plague of Shadows, Spectre of Torment, and King of Cards, which are the three DLCs for Shovel Knight, which we covered previously in Issue 325. So joining me, Leah Haidu, in Issue 424 are Joshua Garrity.
Hello there.
Hi. And John Salmon.
Hello. Hi.
Hi. For anybody who might not know what Shovel Knight is, well, first of all, obviously, I recommend that you go back and listen to the issue where we covered the base game, which was, as I said, 325. We're not going to go too heavily into the mechanics because we are the mechanics of the base game, that is. There are some pretty notable differences that we will go into quite a bit. But this issue, we'll be covering those three additional campaigns that were added after the release. It is a retro-style platformer, so a lot of the Mega Man-ish comparisons that you may have heard, notably from me, I've said stuff like that a lot. But yes, it's a intended to look like a sort of a retro NES-style platformer, obviously with some things that wouldn't necessarily have been possible with the actual hardware, but we'll go into a little bit of what those differences are. Published and developed by Yacht Club Games as a result of a Kickstarter campaign way back in 2014. Kickstarter campaign was quite successful, and since then the game has been released on pretty much every platform you can think of, starting from the Wii U all the way up to I think that the Switch is the most recent release. So it's pretty widely spread. No matter what kind of console or PC you have, you are probably going to be able to snag a copy and play that if you are so inclined. So music, much like the base game, composed by Jake Kaufman, and also features several tracks from Manami Matsume, who you may recognize if you are a music aficionado of these types of games. It's composed for the Mega Man series, so that's very apt, I think, and probably actually mentioned that in the original Shovel Knight show. That they kind of nailed it right there with their choice of composers. Directed by Sean Velasco, and I will actually kind of skip over a bit of the rest of the credits. If you are interested in going into those in more detail, I do recommend that you hit up the Mobi Game site, which is where we usually get our credits stuff from, or even Wikipedia. But we mentioned a lot of the individuals in the original show, so I'm not going to repeat too much of that. But yeah, since there are four distinct campaigns, most of the creatives who worked on them are largely the same. Few changes here and there. Reviews were pretty good, as they were for the base game. These are just some averages from OpenCritic. Plague of Shadows averaged about an 82. Spectre of Torment averaged an 86, and King of Cards an 85. So pretty high up there. People liked these. It's easy oftentimes to maybe put out some DLC that's not necessarily the quality of the title it's adding on to, but it seems like for the most part people feel that these DLCs were pretty well done. And we'll talk about our feelings on that as we go. It's a little difficult as well to come up with sales figures specifically for the DLCs due to just kind of the nature of them. The releases were spread out across multiple platforms, and also people got them in different ways. If you own the base game, you can download them separately. There is also a treasure trove compilation that is available that includes all of the DLCs together. So the sales figure that I think is most impressive is that there have been over 2.5 million copies of this game sold across all of the platforms. And Yacht Club has gone on record as saying that the Nintendo sales are really hefty. 25% of those have been on Switch, despite that being the latest release in the whole family. Plague of Shadows, which is the first of the DLCs released September 15th, 2015. Then a little over a year and a half after that, we have the second campaign, the Spectre of Truth, which launched March 3rd, 2017. And then just lately, King of Cards, December 10th, 2019. So this particular recording that we are on right now was actually scheduled for last year, but we switched it up a little bit because we wanted to make sure that King of Cards got included. It's been pushed back at least once, and you know, wanted to have a full spectrum of the DLC for the game. So speaking of the DLC for the game and our histories with it, I want to talk about our personal histories. So Josh, let's go ahead and start with you. I think if I am remembering correctly, you were on the original Shovel Knight show, correct?
Yes. And I was hugely enthusiastic about the game on that issue. I love the original Shovel Knight. I think it's, you know, it's definitely amongst my favorite platformers that's out there. And the DLC was a weird one for me because Plague of Shadows came out, and I expected it to be something that I would dive in and just completely rinse, like I did with the previous main campaign. But I dipped in, and we'll get into this later, but I realized that Plague of Shadows is kind of essentially a Richter mode for the original campaign, and I kind of wasn't feeling it, so I kind of dropped off. Then, you know, 2 years later, Spectre Knight's campaign, Spectre of Torment, comes out, and that's the thing that grabs me. And I, you know, we'll get into the reasons why, but I absolutely adored that. And then I was eagerly awaiting King of Cards. It's like, come on. And you mentioned the most recent delay. I believe it was actually delayed a time before that. The intent was actually to release it a year after Spectre of Torment, but that didn't pan out for whatever reason. And in the interim, I managed to get through Plague of Shadow. King of Cards came out end of last year, as we've mentioned. I didn't actually, I was intending to kind of grab onto it and just, you know, rinse it like I did with Spectre of Torment. But I ended up picking it up, putting it down, and then just a bunch of other stuff kind of distracted me for a while. But I knew, you know, by, you know, early 2020, I knew that this show was going to be on the horizon. So I kind of deliberately decided, right, let's wait until we're closer to the recording, so I have some fresh memories on King of Cards. And I finished it last weekend. For context, I played through the original Shovel Knight campaign on PC, but these entries I played through on Switch.
John, you were not on the original Shovel Knight show, I don't believe. So have you been keeping up with the DLCs, or is it all kind of a one-off thing for you?
It's a little bit of half and half, really. Yeah, you're right, I wasn't on the original show a couple of years ago. I did play the original Shovel Knight roughly when it was first released. I think I originally owned it on the 3DS, of all places, and then later bought the Xbox One version when that was released. I believe, I'm looking at that now, April 2015, so I was on that about the time it released. Played through that mostly all in the course of a couple of months, but didn't actually finish up getting the last couple of feats until earlier this year. And I'd always wanted to go and play all the DLCs, but I had this mindset of I want to do everything in the original game first, so I kind of kept putting it off. And then the show was announced and we were going to do it last year, so it would have been an opportunity. Then that got bumped back. So, I mean, I eventually finished everything off this year, but each of the DLCs campaigns, I started to play them and maybe dabbled with the first two or three levels around the time that each one was released. But really, it's been, I think, Plague Knight's campaign. I ended up just sitting down and going ham on that in about January this year. Spectre Knight was about a month ago, and then King Knight has been literally like the last week. I've played tons of it over, it's not maybe not even a week, maybe like 6 days. And I only finished it I can't remember, time's kind of all blending into each other. Maybe 2 days ago, maybe Thursday or Friday at this point. And I've played through most of King Knight again on New Game Plus, which actually gets surprisingly hard. And I ended up putting it down earlier this afternoon after I got too pissed off with it. But apart from sort of doing another couple of playthroughs of King Knight, I've basically done everything in all of the campaigns now. So nearly finished with it. Nearly. It's been a long time. And funnily enough, actually, when I was messing about with Plague Knight a few months ago, I got the 3DS out to see if it was still playable on there, to see if all the campaigns and stuff were still playable. And it looked like it had done an update and it was possible to play Plague of Shadows, whatever the Spectre Knight one is called.
Spectre Torment.
That's the fella. But it appears that the King Knight DLC was never added to the 3DS version, which is a bit of a shame. Might be something to do with the fact that the 3DS shop doesn't seem to work anymore in the UK. But again, that might be an actual thing, or it might just be my 3DS being a bit of a pain. But yeah, it's weird that they didn't seem to have added the final campaign for that version.
I kind of get it just because they're focusing on the Switch, but it is kind of a shame.
I mean, how many people are going to be playing it on the 3DS anymore? Maybe more than you think. But the other thing that I suppose is a bit of a thing about it was, so I bought both of these games when it was just the original campaigns that were there, and I'm fairly sure they were both relatively inexpensive, and it seems like their sort of fix for that, certainly for the Xbox One version, is they've basically released each of the DLC campaigns as free add-ons. But if you hadn't bought it originally, it's now much more expensive than it initially was. I want to say I paid maybe like £15 for it, and now on the Xbox store it's like 36 or something like that.
So I don't usually go back and play DLC for almost anything. There are notable exceptions, and usually those exceptions come when it is a substantial chunk of something, like this is, you know, this is whole new campaigns. Another example that is one of the DLCs notably that I went back for was the Witcher DLC, which is, or the Witcher 3 rather DLC, which is, again, it's almost another game just by itself. It's not that I have issues with the value proposition of DLC. I think what it is mostly for me and DLC is that once I have finished with a game, if I'm going to go back to it and kind of re-acclimate myself to the gameplay and the game style, then it has to be worth it. I recently played the DLC for Control, a game which I really, really love, and I had a hard time with it because I had not played the base game in so long that I was kind of lacking in some of my skills, I guess. That is to say, I played the original Shovel Knight again before I started playing the DLC for this recording, because I was afraid that I was just going to start a DLC campaign and immediately fall into a pit and just continue to fall into the pit, which did happen a couple of times, because any level with Propeller Knight is awful and evil and I want nothing to do with it ever again. But
you will fall into pits over and over regardless of whether you're familiar with the original Shovel Knight campaign. Like,
oh yeah,
100%. They're all so blimmin' different that it's like a complete separate learning curve.
Yeah, and I think that's probably what we're going to spend the bulk of our time talking about on this recording, because a lot of the things that are surrounding it are pretty much the same, but then you get into the differences and those are really crazy. But so for me, playing through the DLC for Shovel Knight, I originally had played the base game on the PS4 years ago. It was not right when it came out, probably pretty close. And then, you know, again, for the for that podcast, for this podcast, I knew that it was coming up, so I picked up a copy of the Treasure Trove version of the game for the Switch, which is the one that includes everything. It has all the DLC campaigns just all packaged together, which was, I want to say, about four. I think I might have gotten it on sale somewhere, but retail price for that over here, I think, is like $40, whereas you can probably get the base Shovel Knight for 15 or 20. So yeah, there is a pretty significant price difference. But I would say that you are getting quite a bit for that extra money if you are just going into it for the first time. So I played through the base game again. And then over the past couple of weeks, I have played through the other three campaigns. And I finished King Knight's campaign this morning after a lot of swearing at the final boss. So... Yeah, it's that, oh man, I was not happy. You know how it shows you that little scroll at the end, how many times you've died in each one? It was a big number. It was a large number. It's like all my other ones are like, oh, you died 2 times in this level. You died 3 times in this level. That was like, you died 35 times in this level. I'm like, oh God. Makes me feel like I'm good at video games and I'm bad at video games all at the same time, which I guess is kind of the mark of a good platformer for me. I want to keep playing it, but I've died a lot. But yes, so I've actually only played through each of these once, save for the base game. So and right one after the other at that. So be interesting to hear how having them spread out is different from having them all kind of one after the other. Spoiler alert, if you care about the story of Shovel Knight, which there actually is story.
Yeah.
It's shockingly good. Yeah, you might think that, hey, you know, it's an 8-bit platformer, you know, it's you go save the girl and that's it. Or if you do the gender swap, which is not available in the DLCs, and that kind of made me sad. But if you think that it's kind of straightforward, I mean, it's nothing earth-shattering, really, but they actually did put a story into the DLCs that interweaves pretty well with the original story. So the story of the original Shovel Knight is basically that you are going to rescue your one-time companion Spectre, Shield Knight, and you know, you do that and find out at the end that Shield Knight has actually been the evil enchantress all along. Evil, air quotes, evil. So there you go. That's the story of the original Shovel Knight, basically. And then we have three DLCs, one of which is rather cleverly, I thought, interwoven with the base game timeline-wise. Plague of Shadows takes place at the same time as the base Shovel Knight. And then the other two, Spectre Knight's campaign and King Knight's campaign, are both prequels, kind of showing how things got to the state that they are when you play the original Shovel Knight. The visuals are basically the same.
I think some of the sprite work, especially for the protagonists of each DLC campaign, was notably more extravagant. Like Spectre Knight, I think benefits the most because I think it's basically a brand new sprite because they couldn't use the boss sprite that features in the original campaign. And there's some flourishes in terms of animation, like the intro that he does where he swivels his scythe around and there's like a streak of red behind it. It looks really good. And some of the stuff that they've adjusted in the sprites for King Knight and Plague Knight so they work as protagonists looks great as well. I don't know what went into that. Like, I mean, and that's not to like criticize Shovel Knight's animation, but for whatever reason I think there's a slight noticeable step up in the quality of the animation for the lead characters.
I completely agree with that. I mean, as you point out with Spectre Knight specifically, they all do animations and moves and just so many more things to each character than there were as their original, pretty much just one boss fight. And they're all the bosses from fairly early in the game in the original campaign. So they didn't have wildly varied move sets and that sort of thing going on. So yeah, it just looks a bit nicer and a bit cleaner. And I think in some places, you know, it seems a bit smoother. Some of the frame ratey stuff is a bit smoother and like the number of frames in some of the moving and jumping animation seems to be better than it was originally. And even when you see Shovel Knight at various points throughout each campaign, there were bits where I looked at the sprite of the model and thought that definitely looks better than it did in that original release.
And I wonder how much that is to do, because the original Shovel Knight was a Kickstarter-backed game and they had no idea what it was going to become. But after Shovel Knight was not just a success, but like a smash hit success, I wonder how. And my understanding is that Yacht Club is still pretty, you know, a pretty lean team. I wonder how much that success has kind of bought them the ability to be perfectionists. Because like these, you know, especially Spectre Knight and King Knight, they were delayed a couple of times. I just have to think like, right, well, you've got all this resource because of how much money the original game made. Can we just spend some extra time just polishing and perfecting everything? I think like we're talking about one aspect of that, which the animation and the artwork. I think that actually feeds into stuff that we're going to talk about later. Like there's just a level of like fine tuning and just constant tweaking here that that's again, I don't want to sound like I'm casting shade on the original campaign. I think that game is incredibly finely tuned. But I look at the animation for Shovel Knight in the original campaign and it's very functional. It's all about kind of clarity for the player so that they know exactly what they're doing and exactly what they're committing to. Whereas here it feels like that clarity's there and a bit extra, a bit more personality, a bit more flourish.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think that I would not have said that, like, oh, there's different art, but the art that there is just kind of polished up, is I think, a good way to put it. But as they go on, this ties into what you were saying, Josh, we will talk about how the first chronological DLC, the Plague Knight stuff, is basically you're playing through the same levels. You have different mechanics, but the actual things that you are doing, the progress that you are making, is pretty much just you put a different character into Shovel Knight's campaign, to its detriment in a couple of places, I would argue.
Yeah.
But by the time you get to King Knight, the last barely 6 months old at this point DLC, you know, you have completely different stages. You have a whole new mini game that's been slotted in there, which you can argue about whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. But, you know, there is a considerable amount more content that is different from the original release by the time, you know, you roll around to those later DLCs. It's pretty easy to kind of see that progress as you go through those three. Music, in addition to being tweaked for the differences in the art style, the music, most of the tracks are kind of the same. Some of them are exactly the same, but they have these changes that are made where you can tell it's not the same track, and it can be something as simple as a key change. It can be something as simple as just slightly different orchestration, or, well, I guess orchestration is probably the wrong word since it's basically chiptunes, but you know, slightly different changes that have been made to each of these tracks to kind of make them fit the character better, to kind of make them feel like you are doing something different and this is how that character maybe would interpret it. So I believe that I have heard I love the music for Shovel Knight, first of all, but I believe that I have heard or seen in discussion leading up to this that it seems like King Knight is pretty popular music wise. Is that something that you guys would agree with?
Oh, absolutely. Some of the tracks in King Knight are definitely well up there with the best tracks that are in any of the campaigns, and even the some of the remixed things, the extra little bits of flourish they put on some of the tracks. And I always think of King Knight as being a bit like, he's sort of bombastic and showy. And there's an element to one of the pieces of music made me think of that famous piece in Shadow of the Colossus, the sort of when you start climbing up the first Colossus and the sort of the big triumphant music kicks in. I mean, it's kind of like that in my head, but it's quite a sort of a contrast when you've got the four campaigns that all have... They've all got their own sort of very different tones. I mean, the Plague Knight campaign, as you said before, the music is very much the same tracks from the original with a couple of extra ones added in. But that campaign feels quite different. Like the Plague Knight campaign is sort of it's more of a love story than like an adventure. And then the Spectre Knight campaign is more kind of a dark sort of prequel, it kind of like a sort of a, I don't know how to describe it. It's like
it's dry. The developers described it as a drama.
Right.
The stakes are much more personal. So yeah, with Shovel Knight, the stakes are like world-ending. You know, you're taking out Sauron or Darth Vader or whatever. But in Spectre Knight, the tone is much more like his like tragedy, his personal quest.
Yeah, tragedy is a very good way to describe it. I mean, it's almost a revenge story. And I think, again, the music reflects that. And then King Knight is just kind of a big, dumb adventure sort of showing off.
Yeah.
Which, it fits perfectly with how they scored it.
Like Spectre Knight and King of Cards are my favourites out of the three in terms of music. And I, as you say, John, like, I think they do such a good job of remixing tracks that are, like, already, like, firm favourites of mine. Mm. And just, like, yeah, like, so some favourites of mine, like Aqua Vita is the remixed version of the Explodatorium theme from the original campaign. Mm-hmm. This features in Spectre Knight, Spectre of Torment. And it's just got an energy and a erraticness that the original version of the track doesn't have. And it speaks to the kind of like, because Spectre Knight and Plague Knight have a bit of a tumultuous relationship. Spectre Knight seems to be the only member of the Order of No Quarter who can get under Plague Knight's skin a little bit. So I love that the music reflects that. Also, like, the Pridemore level, the remix track is called In the Halls of the King, and it's a lot more optimistic and light compared to the original version. Mm-hmm. And then that, like, some of the original music in King of Cards, I really love Cruise Control, which is the airship theme, which is just majestic.
It's a shame that the airship levels are always so good music-wise, because I hate the airship levels.
Spoilers, you get to fight the Triple King at one point in King of Cards, and the track that accompanies him, Ye Fruitly Benediction, which, by the way, some really nice track naming there. It's just great as well. It's like it's a more aggressive, more energetic, like remix of the Triple King's waltz. So, I think the music continues to be an absolute highlight of this series. And I just thinking playing King of Cards recently, we could do a Sound of Play on the Shovel Knight Treasure Trove collection on its
Heck
own.
Yeah, we
like,
could.
Yeah, it's just...
Take notes.
Every single track is gold.
Yeah, I made me think when you were talking about the naming of some of the tracks. I thought that the writing in the King of Cards campaign was just really funny. Like, we've talked multiple times about how it is hard to have a genuinely funny game. And I really just like some of the King's stuff. He reminds me of he definitely reminds me of a specific character. And I've been trying to think of who exactly it is. But just the way that he talks just is it's fantastic, because he's not a total idiot, but he is very confident of himself when maybe he shouldn't be. And you get that in the other campaigns, but almost the first thing that happens in his campaign is his mom telling him that, oh yes, sweetie, you're very adorable. And just the whole storyline throughout that with his mom, like, basically hooking up with the old king and him just freaking out about it is just, it's very good. It's very good. I got a real kick out of the writing. And I mean, that's not to say, like I said, that the writing is bad or inferior in any of the other ones, but this one, King of Cards really stood out for me as just genuinely making me laugh. That combines with both things like the track names and also some of the animations when after you fight the Triple King and
yes.
He comes onto your ship. He will eventually become a vendor for you, but before he will do that, he comes onto your ship and says that he has allergies and that it's really just blocking him up, and just the animations of his eyes are just so good. And you have to jump off of the ledge above him and just kind of spin jump into his blowhole to clear everything out, and just that whole sequence is just I love it. I love it.
Yeah. I had no idea that that's how he... I just thought he was ill and that was it.
Nope. Yep. Yeah. If you look at him, you can see he's got like a kind of a rainbow blob on the top of his head. And I kept trying to like just dash over to him, and I'm like, oh, I can't reach. I just kept falling off the edge. And then I was like, well, you know, you can jump off the top. So, yep. If you do that, he will sell you decrees, which is very useful in some of the later levels.
Nice.
The only disappointment I have with the Trouple King being added to the ship is the spot that he ends up in. Previously, there was like a little lifeboat, or like a little plane or something there. And if you mm-hmm. did the same thing, if you jumped off the top, you fell into the little pilot seat of this little plane. And if you moved the stick back and forwards, King Knight would sort of play with the steering wheel. It looked like he was a child in one of those little things that you see outside supermarkets.
Yep.
That was so funny.
I did not
funny.
Ever do that, but yeah, I wish that I had. Yeah, because I did the same thing. I kind of tried to get up onto the ship, and I just wasn't really able to, just because it's of where it's situated. But yeah, that's pretty funny. I like that. This is what I'm saying. Like, that was a really funny campaign for me.
Yeah, I enjoyed definitely. It. If we're referring to the other ones as like a love story and a tragedy, then this one's definitely a comedy.
Oh yeah, kind of a road trip comedy.
Comedy of errors or something.
Yeah. Something like that. We've already started to talk a little bit about the differences between some of these campaigns, but I want to go a little bit into more depth about what you do in some of them and how they're different from the base campaign. So we'll start with Plague Knight, and I have some correspondence here from DeMonth on the forum, who says, I don't think many people will think this, so I'll go ahead and shoulder it. Plague of Shadows was the most fun I had with Shovel Knight. Everything else was good and even great, but the amount of experimentation you could do with the different blends of catalysts and fuses for any situation made it a blast. Ha. Of course, the best objective jump was the float jump, so maybe that's not the best thing, but who cares? The love story element was just really sweet. Took me a while before I wanted to click off that the end dance. Mm. So yeah, I agree. I don't think that many people would maybe, well, I don't know. I did not find the Plague Knight campaign to be my favorite, but it was well constructed, and it did allow for a lot of customization. What did you guys think? Did you, I kind of found a combination that I liked, and for the most part stuck with it until I ran into trouble, and then I would, you know, swap it up for maybe a boss fight here or there, but for the most part it was pretty consistently locked in as to what I was going to be doing through a full level. Was that your guys' experience, or did you do more experimenting than me?
Yeah, I think this is something that I've had, I wouldn't say trouble, but has been an issue for me across all of the four campaigns, including the original, is there is just too much. There are too many heirlooms. There are too many different customization options for me to realistically like keep in my head of what's perfect for every situation. So I kind of just normally defaulted to whatever would either give me like a longer jump or a further reach or something that would allow me to do like an extra jump in the air in case I was about to fall into a pit or something along those lines that was very purely like either survival based or, you know, getting the extra bit of height so that you could skip out a couple of platforms or skip past a more difficult enemy. And I kind of did that with all of them. And unfortunately, I did use everything. I did try out all of the different things. And I think specifically the Spectre Knight campaign, but then they do it in King of Cards as well. They've both got, you know, a good little tutorial for each, whatever the upgrades in those respective games are called. I mean, they're always called a different thing across each one. And there's about four different types of upgrades for most of them. So I've kind of lost track of the specifics, but it ended up with me basically just, I think in King Knight's campaign, we're supposed to be talking about Plague Knight at the moment, I suppose.
It's okay.
You know, I never took off the armor that gave you like an extra boost if you fell into a pit or onto spikes because, God.
Yeah.
And even like deploying that tactically occasionally where they'd obviously put like a medallion or something quite high up that you were supposed to do some, you know, some funky, skillful bash and then a spin jump on top of an enemy that was moving or something to get it. And some of them where they were like that and they were above big pits, I was just like, ah, sod this, just jumped in the pit and get the extra height from being pulled up by the rats to get the medallion easy. But that was generally my my strategy. Use the thing that gives you a little bit of invincibility or a little bit of an extra jump. And like I say, I tried everything out, and there are certain bosses across each campaign who are very easy to kill with specific items. But that was kind of like the limit of my exploration with them, was kind of using them as cheap boss killers where necessary.
My experience of Plague Knight was that I would have a loadout for actually going through the levels and then a loadout for the boss.
Yeah.
Going through the levels, my priority was maintaining any kind of control or some kind of like countermeasure for the kind of erratic nature of the way Plague Knight controls. And then when you're in the boss, it's just damage, damage, damage. Like, how much damage can I do? And how much, like, area do, you know, my explosions cover and all of that stuff. Though, like, I think this is moving away from the actual abilities itself, but and I think you've hinted at this previously, Leah. I do think Plague Knight is the campaign that I struggle with the most, and it's just because it's so clearly designed for a different character. I don't think Plague Knight is the problem. A lot of people point to Plague Knight and his kind of weird control scheme and all of that stuff. I think that would have been fine if he had a campaign like Spectre Knight, like King Knight, that was constructed for his unique system. But you're controlling a character who's going through levels designed for a very different character. And there are just moments where you feel it. And the developers have actually acknowledged this. There's a great video from Game Maker's Toolkit where he interviews some of the developers at Yacht Club. And they acknowledge like there was a there are platforms there, people are gonna jump on them. But with Plague Knight, you don't necessarily need to jump on them. You could just fly through. But because of the way we've guided the player's eye, the way the level design guides you, you're just automatically doing things that are counter to Plague Knight's strengths as a character. This is a weakness that is complete. I think is completely eradicated in the later two campaigns. I think though the level design is much more well suited for the unique strengths and weaknesses of those characters. But here, as much fun as I had with this campaign, it always felt lesser just because of that. Just because I felt like I was just playing through a level that would have felt better with the original character.
Yeah, I agree with that. It wasn't always a problem, but when it was, it could be really frustrating. Yeah. Because for me, this was most apparent usually in the boss fights.
Yeah.
And the one that I'm thinking of specifically is the Enchantress fight at the end. Like, it was clearly designed for a character with different abilities. And yeah, you can absolutely do it. I mean, we all did, but it just didn't feel as good as some of the other campaigns. I don't even think that they needed to change everything. Like, the King Knight campaign was kind of a complete overhaul. Like, that was not reusing really much of anything. But the Spectre Knight campaign, a lot of that was very similar, but with changes that made it feel right and kind of feel better. I think that they could have kept most of what was already there if that was, you know, what they wanted to do. But here it just, I don't know, it there were a few places that just kind of fell flat for me, or even worse, were not flat, but actively frustrating.
I will say that I'd really like the flavor of Plague Knight. I think Mona, the relationship between Mona and Percy is a great foil as well for the Plague Knight. I think all of that stuff, the story stuff, is great.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, so we've kind of danced around it, but this is kind of a love story, and it's cute. So you are going through these levels kind of concurrently with Shovel Knight, and in a couple of places you can actually see Shovel Knight popping up. He's a boss fight in the Explodatorium, because obviously as Plague Knight you are not the boss in the Explodatorium. But you know, he's the boss there, and also when you go into some of the towns, you're kind of in the background to start off with, and Shovel Knight is running around in the foreground, and you know, intended to be, this is him going through his campaign, and you are back in the shadows there. Mona is, she is in the base Shovel Knight campaign, but she's kind of off in a side room. She does the game where you just, you hit the vials of whatever it is into targets and can get some rewards from that. But I believe that's the only place you really see her. This is, she's a chemist, a scientist of some sort, an inventor, who, you know, is basically a love interest for Plague Knight, only he's kind of dense and doesn't realize it to start off with. I don't think any of the correspondents actually said this specifically. Maybe they did, but I do like that. I don't know that any of these are actually functional or if they're just kind of swag, but in all three of the campaigns there is kind of a sort of emote that you can unlock, and it varies. For Plague Knight, you can unlock by upgrading something that seems to at first have no real purpose in your kind of base. Plague Knight, you unlock if you hold down on your directional pad, he will just start to dance. Part of Mona's thing is that you find her just dancing by herself in the room at one point. And if what I thought was really cute is if you go in there as Plague Knight after you've unlocked this emote and you try to dance, he's too shy and he won't do it. He just kind of sits there and taps his fingers together like, oh, I can't do this in front of her. I thought that was cute. But yeah, it's sweet. You know, it's not like an overdone thing, but I liked the little storyline there.
For a game where you're stealing a bunch of other bosses' life forces out of them, including taking Shovel Knight while he's asleep.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, you fight Shovel Knight as I don't. Do you do a boss fight with Shovel Knight in all three of the campaigns? I know it's at least in Plague Knight and King Knight.
Wait, do you actually fight him in King Knight?
Yeah, you do, or you can.
He comes in at the end. I can't remember actually fighting him. I might have done.
Oh, maybe you don't. I don't remember. Well, but it when he shows up during those fights, like after you win the fight, he will basically come in and just whack you with, you know, a one last attack. Yeah, when you come out of the Plague Knight fight, he's, you know, sleeping at the campfire like he is in the base Shovel Knight campaign, and you just go, well, I'm not going to leave him with this, and then just steal his soul from him anyway.
I think that Shovel Knight fight as Plague Knight at the end of the Explodatorium, that was a particularly horrible boss fight because he is like the worst, like cheesiest player. When you fight him, he has a lot of the heirlooms and stuff that he uses, and he heals himself at one point as well after you get him down to about half health.
So. He's fast too.
Yeah.
That was one of the things that I found to be kind of tough about Plague Knight with respect to going through levels that were developed for Shovel Knight is that Plague Knight is pretty slow, and there are things that you can do to compensate for that, but it's tough when, as we've been talking about, you know, you are conditioned, especially if you've just played the Shovel Knight levels, you're conditioned to thinking about things in a certain way. So I don't know that that's necessarily a thing to knock it for completely, but it's tough, I think.
Yeah, I think it was the out of all of the campaigns, it was definitely the one that gave me the most trouble with. Certain areas, as you say, are probably not really designed to be played as Plague Knight, including, as you've mentioned at least once or twice, the Propeller Knight levels are all hell with Plague Knight.
That was another one of that boss fight. Man, that boss fight. I got knocked into pits so many times.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, I don't know. I think as like a speed run, it's interesting because you can sort of just dash through large sections of it. But yeah, as like a difficulty run, I mean, part of playing through all of the campaigns and trying to do all of the feats in them, each one, I think, apart from King Knight's campaign, has a feat for destroying all the checkpoints as you go through the levels.
Oh, God, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, I mean, there's bits where if you've also done the New Game Plus in each mode, one of the things that they really do in all of those is they strip out a lot of the checkpoints. So some of the levels that originally had, like, maybe up to 6 or 7 checkpoints on New Game Plus, they'll have maybe 2 or 3 instead. So, yeah, I mean, the Plague Knight stuff, going through the levels, especially those Blimmin' Propeller Knight levels where you die so easily into a pit, while also trying to destroy all the checkpoints was not something that I particularly enjoyed doing.
Oh, this is a fun story, actually. I speaking of the propeller knight levels and destroying checkpoints, maybe not intentionally, this was during my Plague Knight playthrough. I was at the propeller knight boss fight and I was having trouble with it. So I was trying, you know, different combinations of things, of fuses and casings and everything to see what I could do that would make things better. And I went to test something and accidentally broke the checkpoint right before the boss.
Right.
I dropped out of the level and did the whole thing again because I'm like, I can't do this. I stopped for that day. I need to come back to this. So don't break the checkpoint. That's also, spikes are bad.
Yeah, they do some horrible things in that propeller knight level of mixing up pits, auto scrolling, the wind, and then also putting spikes on the ceiling at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just too much. It's too much.
Especially with Plague Knight. Like, I think with King Knight and Spectre Knight, you have a degree of control over those characters, where those kind of scrolling levels or high intensity, like high fret levels, where like there's no floor under you, they're easier to deal with because you kind of get a sense, I know exactly what's going to happen when I push a button with those mm-hmm. characters. With Plague Knight, it's like, well, I mean, I can be reasonably sure he'll make this distance, but whether or not I actually land on anything is up to the fates, as it were.
For sure.
It's interesting. I think the only bit in anything that rivaled the amount of frustration that I got out of that one little segment was some auto-scrolling bits in the Enchantress's Tower. I don't really remember them being that much of a problem with Plague Knight, but I remember really hating them with Spectre Knight. I think there's two right at the end. Where the thing scrolls upwards and you have to dash between the lanterns or whatever they are quickly and spin round and go back the other way, and there's moving platforms at the same time. It's just like overwhelming amount of stuff.
The one that got me was during King Knight, during the Enchantress's Tower, where it's, you have like warp walls. Like when you hit one wall, you warp through it and out the other side.
Yeah.
And there is an auto scroller that does that, where you have to, there are very, very few places that you can land. You just kind of have to keep bouncing off of things. I had a tweet typed out that I did not send that was, there has never been a good auto-scroller level ever, fight me. So I don't know if I believe that. I might still believe that a little bit. But there's some really challenging stuff there. So the second DLC campaign to be released was Spectre of Torment, which is Spectre Knight's campaign. I'm wearing my Spectre Knight shirt right now, and it's nice. Fangamer has some nice Shovel Knight stuff. But I'll start this off with Heavener from the forum, who says, Spectre Knight, however, turned out to be my favorite campaign. I love his fighting style. Unlike Shovel Knight, Spectre Knight is capable of rushing in all directions mid-air, and this continuously. It gave me a rush to be able to keep moving in the air this quickly. Spectre Knight's fighting style really has something ghost-like about it. In addition, seeing how all the other knights were recruited for the Enchantress gave them an interesting background. It's quite rare that a DLC turns out to be better than the main game, but to me, Spectre Knight is a perfect example of this. Spectre Knight's campaign, as we mentioned, this and King Knight's campaign are prequels. Spectre Knight specifically shows you a little bit about their background and why he ended up as one of the knights, and the fact that he is the one who actually recruits all of the other knights, because he's kind of beholden to the Enchantress for something that she did for him, allowed him to do. She saved. This is something that I kind of wondered about, is if this story was there beforehand. And specifically, I'm talking about Raze. I'm going to say Raze. Raze is one of the, in the original Shovel Knight campaign, Raze is one of the kind of wandering characters that you run into on the world map, that is not a specific stage. You know, they move around like Super Mario Brothers 3 style, and you run into them on the world map. He's the one with like the little boomerangs that you fight. And here you find out that Raze is actually the son of Luan, who is a kind of a fighting compatriot, friend, whatever to Spectre Knight. Spectre Knight actually sold his soul essentially to the Enchantress for the ability to keep Rhys safe and alive. And that's interesting, but I wonder if that was a thing to begin with, because those characters in original Shovel Knight, those characters that you run into, you know, there are several of them, and they all do come back in these DLCs. I wonder if that was the intent to begin with, or if that was kind of retrofitted to the campaign afterwards.
I mean, I think it's definitely retrofitted.
It would almost have to be, but it seems it seems like so out of nowhere. Like, where did these designs even come from? If they didn't have something planned for them,
I think it's just a really. It is retrofitted, but I think it's just a really elegant example of retrofitting a plot because it feels so of a piece. Just stuff like the flashbacks where. You've got Luan and he's Donovan in the flashbacks. Just like the way their armor is designed in those flashbacks looks very similar to Rhys's. And also just like tying in Shield Knight in like very directly into Spectre Knight's backstory is really elegant as well. So you have that kind of tragic dichotomy of him basically serving the person who's responsible for his friend and himself's death, which is great. There's some really good, like genuinely really good storytelling going on in this DLC. And not just like in terms of writing, they did a bit of this in the original campaign where in the final boss, finally Shovel Knight and Shield Knight fight alongside each other, and you get a real sense of like how these two were so effective together through play, like through the cooperation that you do with Shield Knight in that fight. And they do a bit of that stuff here as well. Like Luan does some like acrobatics and kind of throwing you across the stage to assist you, and you get a sense of like why these two are so close and like that relationship built through mechanics, but through systems in the game itself, which is really, really clever. Yeah, I think in terms of storytelling, this is probably my favorite. Spectre Knight is one of my favorite, in terms of just a character to control, Spectre Knight is amongst my favorite in the platforming genre. It's just, he's so slick and so cool. The wall running, the slash attack, all of that stuff, the surfing on your scythe, like as silly as that is, it's so cool. And they're like more than any of the other campaigns, and I'm including the original campaign here, like this kind of put me in that flow state that you really, really want with these kind of platformers, like that state where you're kind of thinking two moves ahead. And like the trust I had in the fundamentals of the way Spectre Knight controlled meant that I was completely embraced the difficulty. And like this campaign, I think, gets really difficult, especially when you get towards the latter stages. But I was here for it because I was just having so much fun controlling this character.
I think what Josh said is spot on about the way that it controls, the feeling of fluidity, the coolness that it has to it, the air dash that is at once, the way that the dash move is both a sort of a critical piece of platforming and also an attack at the same time, which is it's so perfect to. I mean, it's again, they all kind of have a similar thing with King Knight doing the bash that then turns into a spin jump, and Shovel Knight doing the bounce with the shovel. But it's one of the things that really got me with Spectre Knight was the kind of the double-edged sword aspect of it, where, I mean, I think the first phase of the Enchantress fight in that campaign, which I think is the same across all of the campaigns, it might be the only thing that's like identical across all four, if it is actually identical, but the bit where you fight her, where she raises the platforms up and stuff and goes underneath the floor, and I think certainly both Plague Knight and Spectre Knight, like, you can lock onto her and destroy the floor as you're going in for an attack and just wipe yourself out at the same time, so it's kind of got this really cool feeling to it, but also like it's a bit dangerous. the idea that you can do skateboarding tricks while you're surfing on your what's it called?
Scythe.
Yeah, while you're surfing on the side, you can do like a dark side flip or something on it. It's so silly, but it feels so good to do it. And I'm really pleased that they brought that same mechanic back, even though only in a very small way for King Knight, who also had the couple of sections of the rails where he kind of slides along them and has the sliding floor where it's effectively the same thing. But yeah, I mean, I thought it's really hard for me to nail down which of the campaigns I like the most, because I really like different aspects about all of them. But I certainly think that Spectre Knight has, it probably has the best combination of both a really good story and feels really, really good to play.
Yeah, the one thing that I will say to kind of bring that down a little bit, and this is tying into something you said, John, about how in the boss fights you can kind of screw yourself over by over committing to something. That was my only issue with Spectre Knight, and this might just be a me thing, a how I play thing, but he was almost too slick. Like, if you get going and get into the flow really good, and then, you know, just do one more jump or one more dive, and that one more dive just kind of takes you off the edge of something. The momentum for me, and this is probably part of, I mean, it's part of the gameplay that they want you to be able to control. You have a lot of mobility there, and just making sure that you're utilizing that while still keeping it under control is, I guess, the challenge of that. But yeah, that I once I got the hang of it, and this is true for all of them, especially since I played them kind of more or less back to back, was changing between those styles always took a little bit of time. But once it, and you know, that first level or two would be kind of a, oh God, this feels too different. I can't do this. Wait a minute. Why? I can't control this. Why is this like this? You know, and then once you get the hang of it, of course, it's much better and starts to feel right or feel good. And I know that King Knight didn't really have a tutorial as to what to do beforehand. I don't recall really whether Spectre Knight did or not. I think that Plague Knight had like a little bit of one to kind of tell you how to, you know, do the burst jump, which you kind of have to do in order to get anywhere. But yeah, it was a little bit trial and error-y for me, from what I remember. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing. I think that in lieu of a specific do this, now push this button tutorial, they do pretty well in introducing you to the mechanics of the characters via like an initial level or two that are not very challenging, that allow you to kind of get the hang of things. The only gripe that I have with Spectre Knight mechanically, I think, would be that would just be that it's easy to kind of lose control of the extreme slickness of what's going on there. Also, and this is kind of a throwaway thing, but I really enjoy that in each of the campaigns you can get an outfit that costs a lot and does absolutely nothing except look cool. I used the gold Plague Knight outfit for a very long time. The final piece of DLC to this point that has been released, King Knight. King Knight is the most, I would say, especially with regard to the level design, is the most different from the base game, I think. There are a lot more levels. They're a lot shorter for the most part. Well, actually, I think in total, they are all just shorter levels. Most of the stages have one checkpoint right in the middle. The boss stages usually, I think, have two, one somewhere in the stage and then one right before the boss. Your mechanics are different as well. And I think this is going to mess with me the next time I go to play a platformer, because rarely are you actually aiming for the platform itself. You're kind of aiming for the edge of the platform so that when you smack into the edge of the platform, you pop up and are at an appropriate height to actually hit the platform. That took some getting used to as well. But it's a mechanic that I don't believe I have seen really ever before. And once I got used to it, I think it works pretty well. I've already talked a little bit about how much I love the writing in this DLC campaign. But what do you guys think?
Yeah, I completely agree. The weird subversion of not actually jumping over a platform, but jumping into the side of it and then doing an extra little move to come out. I mean, the idea that you're playing a character who doesn't actually have like a dedicated kind of attack button. You don't, I mean, you've got the different heirlooms or whatever they're called in that campaign, that some of them are literally just like swipe with a sword in front of you. But generally his attack is not actually a, it's a weird thing to say that it's more like it's just part of his moveset and it's a like a fully functional kind of thing.
Yeah, he's, I mean, it's just a body slam. That I remember standing around in the first level trying to figure out. I was like, well, where's the attack button? I can't attack anything. Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely feels very different. I mean, you mentioned sort of having a bit of trouble getting into each of the different campaigns after playing previous ones. And I had the exact same problem because I think in all of the cases, I'd started playing them sometime previously and then come back pretty much earlier this year to have another go. And I started up playing Plague Knight again originally after, I think I'd done like the first two levels or something of it and then put it down, and 4 years later now coming back, and like I couldn't get over the first jump. I couldn't work out how to clear enough space until realizing, oh, you use the bombs and you do the burst thing with it. But like the amount of time it took me to get back into that one was the worst. But I think all three of them had the same problem, and it was like an embarrassingly long amount of time that I stood trying to figure out like how to get over small jumps and things, just because the moveset was so different from what I was more accustomed to. But with the King Knight stuff, like again, once you get into it, there's a rhythm to it that feels so smooth and so natural, and you do your shoulder slam and then bounce and then another slam and then another little spin, and yeah, you're trying to get then land that into like a pile of jewels or something on the floor, because that's the only way that you can sort of dig through it. Once you get there, and again, same with all of them, like once you figure out exactly what you're doing, like you just get into a really nice rhythm. And I do think that, you know, Spectre Knight is probably the one that felt the best, but King Knight was not far behind with the yeah, charge and then yeah, the spin. And the amount of times where you were using that to also do something that would make sense, like there's bits in the Trample King stages where you're using the shoulder charge to push a boat along that you're inside. Like it feels so good to do it like correctly when it ties up, especially when you get like a really nice sort of slam, then a bounce, and then another slam, another bounce, and then you use the little thing it puts you into a bubble like a frog to just let you hang for a second and get another shoulder slam. Like if you can, you know, you can hit some high spots in some of these levels, and they've all got, or maybe not all of them, but lots of them have got little secret hidden areas, a lot of mm-hmm. which are at the top of the screen where you like you get onto the essentially the ceiling of the screen and then go backwards into a previous stage, and lots of them then end in like hidden exits like you'd get in Super Mario World that lead make the pathway in the overworld go to a different location, or you know, cut something out or give you access to a stage with treasure in it or something. And just figuring everything out like that was just a real joy to do it well.
Yeah, I didn't even get to all of the levels. Like I could not find some of those hidden exits, and I need to go back and search some more, because my maps are not completely filled out, and that drives me a little bit crazy. So but I love that they did that. It is very Super Mario Brothers 3.
Well, it's the combination. It's like Super Mario 3 Overworld with Super Mario yeah. World secret exits.
I mentioned before that you know, Spectre Knight is probably my favorite in terms of just that control and the flow state, but I think King Knight's great strength, and this is another thing that it borrows from Mario, is its kind of quick iteration of ideas, where it has the bravery to introduce something for one level and then just completely drop it. Whereas with Shovel Knight and Spectre Knight, you spend a long, long time, because those levels are long. You spend quite a bit of time just kind of focusing on one idea, one concept. Whereas because of the shorter level designs, the shorter courses, you can introduce something and drop it really quickly. And I think the campaign really benefits from that. So whereas I may not love controlling King Knight as much as Spectre Knight. I love like these levels and just discovering the new concepts. Like that one level with the frogs and the bubbles is just like, that, whoa, okay, that's wild. And then you've got the like weird like dragon newts that are like worming through the environment and you've got to slam axolotls into them. Yeah, the axolotls, sorry. Yeah, like
I really like that word.
Yeah. I think, Leah, you've already mentioned this, but I think more than any other campaign, there's just new stuff. Like the other two are kind of remixing and reapplying ideas and artwork, Spectre Knight more successfully. But here you've just got like new stuff, like new bosses, like new, like there's a boss fight with King Pridemore, which is great. The Triple King is a boss fight, King Birda, like all that stuff. Like it's, and they're really good boss fights. I really liked the boss fight with Triple King. I think it's funny and silly, and but also challenging.
Which incorporates that thing with that John was talking about with bashing the boat back and forth. You're controlling that, and that's a one level thing. It maybe comes back for a second level. I'm not sure, but like it's you know not a sustained mechanic that you're doing a whole lot, but you have to have it down enough to get through this boss fight. I didn't find it to be that difficult with a few exceptions in levels, but I really like it. It felt more like a Mario type of thing than the others did, platformer wise. And I think that's about as high a compliment as I can give it, because they do, you know, they instead of having the longer Shovel Knight, Spectre Knight type levels, they just it felt very tight and very, very controlled. Yeah. Like it almost like they were little puzzles, even to an extent, you know, they weren't, you know, complete brain teasers or anything, but they had more of the levels so they could do more with the kind of short in and out type of stuff, which I like a lot, actually.
It's hard to state how glad I was going into it to find that it wasn't just the same 8 or 10 stages that had been in each of the three previous games, even though, as we said, they were different, mixed up between the three. But it was so nice to just get a new coat of paint on some things and a completely different locations as well.
It's a pretty significant DLC, too. We were talking about this previously, but it's like I thought that when I got to the first castle, that was going to be it. Like, I thought that was the game, you know? And then it opens up and you have three kind of worlds that you go through to get to the three Joustus judges. You want to talk about... Let's talk about Joustus. I like Joustus a lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Joustus is a brand new mechanic to this campaign. It is a card game that you... I don't know actually how much you have to engage with it. I suspect it's not as much as I did.
At all.
Oh, really?
They don't even ignore it.
Yeah.
Okay. So
I mean, it helps unlock some of the abilities and stuff earlier. Yeah.
You get medals
advantages
and money and everything. Yeah. So it is beneficial. But yeah, Joustus is a card game. It has some similarities. I was saying this prior to recording that I just finished playing through Final Fantasy VIII for the umpteenth time, and this time I made it a point to get very into Triple Triad, which this Joustus shares a few things with. It's not quite the same, but you are building a deck of cards that have arrows on them of differing strengths, and some cards have special abilities that you can use. And basically the goal is you have a playing field. You want to have your cards on the spaces that have gems, and whoever has the most gems by the time the entire grid is filled out is the winner and gets to take a card from the loser's deck. Three cards if you sweep all of the gems, which is nice. You can buy extra cards, you can buy cheats, which I thought was pretty funny, because King Knight would 100% be cheating his ass off at all of these fights. And I guess you don't have to do any of it, but I did an actual lot. I didn't do all of it. John, did you actually get all of the cards? Did you 100%
in
this?
I did.
Holy wow.
I did.
There's a lot.
There is a lot to it. Like, it's it's more in depth than really it has any right to be as like a essentially a secondary thing. Although, I mean, say secondary thing, skippable thing, it is all that any of the characters in this game talk about. Like, everybody
true.
Is just obsessed with Joustus.
And then at the end, your last decree is that all of the Joustus cards shall be completely destroyed, which I thought that was pretty funny.
I did quite enjoy that. But yeah, and it's considering that it is essentially skippable, there's a lot to it. There are, I think, 40-something different fights you can do with different characters. There's essentially like boss Joustus areas that are sort of large buildings with multiple people that you have to go through and beat in there. The fourth one of those or the fifth one of those is always actually a boss who has some sort of weird special moves that happen while the game is being played. Like one of them, I think one of them is against three wolves and they dig holes in
that.
The Joustus field. Yeah, that was cool as hell. But yeah, it's a very simple little game, but there's a huge amount to it. And if you do everything, if you go through the four different or three different Joustus boss houses, there's a character in the airship who ends up also becoming a very difficult actual boss fight once you've beaten all of them.
Is it that lady upstairs? I don't remember her name.
Yeah, she's called Cressida or something like that.
Yeah, because I think that I missed one of the houses, because that is actually something else that's kind of nice, is that once you beat these characters, including the pack of wolves, they will come onto your ship. So that's fun, I thought. And yeah, you end up with quite a ship full of people. I liked the houses, or I think some of them are like caves or whatever. I don't know, but major Joustus hubs where you I think it's usually three people or three characters that you have to play and win against, and then the boss of that area will as you say challenge you or allow you to challenge them. And yeah, I don't know. There was just something kind of addictive about it for me. I really got into Joustus. I didn't think I was going to. I thought I was going to play, you know, whatever the necessary. I didn't even realize that there was no necessary round. But I thought I would play like one or two rounds and go, okay, yep, I get it, and then just continue on. But I found myself actually seeking out people to play Joustus with, which did not expect. Josh, did you get into Joustus?
I didn't get into it as much as you two did, but I can't deny there's like a simple pleasure to that game. I'm the guy who actively refuses to play Gwent in The Witcher 3. Like, any time someone says, well, you can pay money for this, or you could play me at Gwent. Here's the money. Just take the money. I don't care. I will pay you just so I don't have to play Gwent. But with this, like, I just found it really elegant. And there's enough depth there to be interesting. And, like, I love, like you mentioned, with the wolves digging holes and stuff like that. I love the way that there are individual matches where they just introduce something weird and interesting that make that particular match exciting. I think there's one where the player has loads of cards with bombs, and there's like rocks that they're burrowing through to try and get to the gem.
That might be Plague Knight, actually.
Yeah.
Because as you beat the bosses, they will come onto your ship and then you can play Joustus against them.
Yeah.
And it's always a bit terrifying when you first come up against them, because you see, I think there's two or three characters who have lots of cards with the bombs, and there's another two or three who've got lots of cards that have, they've got this propeller thing on them where
the card that
they push us then flips over to your side. And when you first come across those people, you don't have any of those cards, because you're only getting your own versions of those cards by beating these people and then taking them. So the first time you come up against it, it's like, oh, I've just got to let this guy win and then use the card that switches all the gems to my side and just cheat and take all his cards off him so that I've got any chance of doing this. But they're all like that. As you go through the game, like, each sort of next step of people have cards that are way too powerful against you. And yeah, it's just difficult to get into a position where... I mean, once you get there, you beat them and take their cards, then you're just destroying everybody else. And certainly, if you go back and rematch the people from earlier on, they become pathetically easy to your cards that have like triple arrows and stuff on them. But yeah, it's cool.
The thing that I really did appreciate is the AI does not appear to know what a valuable card is when they win against you and take it away from you. They just kind of pick at random, which is good because when I was playing Triple Triad, they will always take your best cards. That's just what they do. And also, it's very easy to get your cards back if you do lose them because the guy that sells you Chester, the guy that sells you the relic in the base Shovel Knight campaign now is selling you cards and will actually just straight up say, here's how much money you owe me if you want to get all your cards back. So that's nice. I appreciated that you don't just have to continue playing the same person and hope that they use your card if you want to get it back, because that's unfortunate when it happens. Joustus, man. Kind of want to play more Joustus. You cannot, in fact, play Joustus as a separate thing, to my knowledge, which is unusual. Usually, when they have some kind of minigame like that, in most things, if they're going to make something different, then you can kind of pick it out from the menu. See Gwent for reference. I didn't like Gwent either, but I know that's probably not the most popular opinion, but that's okay. We're allowed.
Something I didn't notice until today was there's actually on the just on the Shovel Knight main menu, one of the options is challengers, and I went and had a quick look at it, and I think that you unlock them as you go through the various games and stuff. But lots of them are like rematches against bosses and things like that, and it added a few bits that, for example, on the Xbox mode, I'd never actually found the boss fight against the Battletoads. I can't remember where they they brought that in. On the PlayStation, I think there's one against Kratos.
Interesting.
I think they're like hidden in amongst levels, and I never found them. But on this challenge mode, they're all there. So I had a quick go against some of these things. It's possible, although I'm not certain, that there are Joustus things buried in amongst that.
So that's actually where I wanted to go after this was oh, cool. There a nice transition, which is always better when you call it out. So there are a couple of other things. I believe the way that you unlock the challenges is I don't know if any of them unlock as you're going through, but I know that there is an announcement kind of after you finish each of the campaigns that says, you know, you unlock New Game Plus, you unlock this sound test mode, and also you unlock challenges. So I think that you maybe just unlock a set of challenges for each of the characters after you finish their particular campaign. Now, I did not check out any of the challenges. I also did not check out the other mode that they include in the I don't know if this is available separately or if it only comes as part of the treasure trove, but the showdown mode. Did either of you mess with John, you talked about challenges a little bit, but did either of you mess with showdown? And Josh, also, did you check out the challenges at all?
I did not. Yeah, showdown sounds interesting as like a Smash Brothers adjacent style versus game where the focus is much more on collecting gems than taking out your friends. But my primary enjoyment came from the main campaigns and rinsing them, and the challenges. While they sounded interesting, I had a lot. I felt like I'd gotten enough challenge out of the main campaign that I didn't need to challenge myself further.
That's kind of where I was. Yeah. It's like by the end of the King Knight campaign, I'm like, oh my God, I need to put this controller down or something's going to get hurt now. Although I did appreciate that they, in the grand style of games before there were really trophies or achievements or anything, they have we have a special message for you after you complete all the campaigns. It's like, congratulations from Yacht Club. That's it. Just, okay, cool. Thank you. I appreciate that.
From flipping down the list of challenges, as far as I can tell, they're mostly just repeating little sections and boss fights. So I don't think there's anything that's sort of buried in amongst them that's worth going to see if you haven't already played the games through. Showdown, again, I tried it out. I wanted to know what it was. I played a few games of it. And yeah, what Josh said, like, it's not really what I'm here for. I'm here for the campaigns and the stories, even though they do appear to have like little mini stories in the showdown mode. But I think they're sort of very rudimentary.
All right. Well, so even if we did not necessarily mess with those between us, I I think that it's worth noting that all of that is there, because there's a lot of content if you decide to pick up the Treasure Trove or whatever version of Shovel Knight plus DLC is out there. There's quite a bit that you can get sunk into if you are so inclined. There's also a sound test mode or music mode that you can go into and listen to the wonderful music. New Game Plus is an option for all of the campaigns. I did not go into this. John, it sounded like you've done at least some of it, because you were talking about the how the checkpoints were kind of knocked down for that. Is the overall difficulty generally just higher?
Yeah, they do a handful of things. The removing most of the checkpoints is one. They remove virtually all, if not all, of the food items across the games. I can't remember exactly for Shovel Knight's original campaign, because I think that was, he literally only had picking up food as the only way he could heal, whereas the other characters can mostly do other things as well.
They have the chalices for Shovel Knight.
Oh yeah, that's right. They do have the chalices. But King Knight, I think very, very early on, I got a power where you just hold down on the directional stick and he pulls out a load of hearts and heals them.
He cries. And as he cries, the hearts come above his head and then they pop down and heal him. That was great.
That's kind of cool. And the others, Spectre and Plague Knight, I think have both got other ways that they can refill their health without the food easily. But yeah, I've done about 2/3 of King Knight's campaign today on New Game Plus, and I have not found a single food item. So that's quite a big deal.
Wow. Yes.
They also because Plague Knight, I think, was about 6 months ago. I've forgotten what the exact details for that were. But Spectre Knight and King Knight, they both make changes to the health systems. Spectre Knight, they put, instead of having a separate health bar and a whatever the mana is called in that campaign, they mix it all together.
Yeah, no, will's the health. I don't remember. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. No, it is will, isn't it? No, I don't know. It doesn't matter. But they mix the two together. So you've got one very long bar that's, I think in that campaign, it consistently bleeds down. So you need to sort of manage it in various ways. And the King Knight New Game Plus is somewhat similar. They give you, instead of having, again, the thing that uses your heirlooms or powers or whatever, they take that away. They cap you at 4 hearts max. They basically tie your amount of times that you can use your powers and stuff to your money. So instead of having like the mana bar, it's basically just your riches. So you pick stuff up and you get like a multiplier for killing enemies that then gives you more money. So you have the possibility of getting extremely rich, but every time you do, say, the little sword spin attack thing, you lose like 350 gold. And every time you get hit, you drop a ton of gems that go bouncing around, and I think they're always worth like 1200 gold or something like that. So you get hit once and suddenly, like, you know, 15,000 gold is all going spinning around and you've got to try and pick it back up before it disappears. And then obviously if you die, you have the money bag situation as usual. But yeah, just it makes it, the sort of inventory management that much more, or the the sort of resource management that much more trickier and more tied into legitimately like being good at the game instead of cheesing things or taking your time with them. They are all quite difficult, but pretty manageable at the same time, because you're doing New Game Plus. In each case, I've done New Game Plus on the same save file that I previously had basically gotten all of the upgrades for, so you kind of start off on an advantage.
That's kind of cool though. I like that they didn't just make it harder by giving enemies more health. It's neat that there's new kind of mechanics to get used to. Cool. I want to read a couple of pieces of correspondence from our forum. I think that at least one of these was from the first time that we were supposed to do this show before the King Knight campaign came out, so just bear that in mind. First piece is from ToonSkatoon from the forum, who says, "The Shovel Knight DLC is a lot like the sack of candy I remember bringing home on Halloween night as a kid. A package of sizable heft with some treats you reach in and scarf down instantly because they're your favorites, a coconut job you pass to your pops because he's into that sort of thing but you aren't, and an apple you chuck into the woods, not because you don't appreciate the value of fruit, but because it's mother shoveling Halloween." That's the fighting game, by the way. "I respect the effort, but yikes, I didn't enjoy it. As for the goodies, Spectre of Torment and King of Cards set my sweet tooth ringing. The way Spectre Knight slips, slides, and slices his way through the homeworld and the levels gave me feel... The way Spectre Knight slips, slides, and slices his way through the homeworld and the levels gave me electric feelings, even surpassing for me the pogo hops from the first game. Simultaneously, the melancholy story and setting were a fine counterbalance to the jubilant traversal system. King of Cards was just as delectable, with the lighthearted action of the pirouetting title character and his cast of colorful compatriots elevating the oddball political intrigue. I even enjoyed Joustus, although I never really felt like I got particularly good at it. That was sort of the beauty of the design of those sections. In my opinion, players were given enough opportunities to play the parlor game, or they might have learned to master it, but my deck felt overpowered enough that mastery wasn't necessary. As for Plague Knight's campaign, I didn't finish it. The gothic vibe worked for me, and I played through a few bosses, but the bombing and floating mechanics weren't nippy enough for my taste. Every morsel of Shovel Knight treasure trove might not have been as delicious as I hoped, but there were certainly moments of satisfaction that made it not only worth the effort to play, but whet my appetite further for whatever confection Yacht Club Games cooks up next. All right. Mr. Ixalite from the forum says, the essence of a good 2D platformer, giving the player an avatar with a simple, fun control scheme and then filling the game to the brim with unique and varied challenges all tailored to said controls. And as far as I'm concerned, Yacht Club has knocked it out of the park no less than 4 times in a row. King and Spectre Knight were both instantly approachable, but Plague Knight, though the most complex, was also surprisingly a joy to play. If a game allows customization, I usually pick a loadout and stick with it, but here I found myself constantly switching things up. I think the secret is that this customization is in the context of an expertly crafted platformer with tons of unique hazards encouraging experimentation. There is something immensely satisfying about building the perfect bomb to take an enemy out safely from across the screen. A lot of the level design may repeat from the first game, but this is alleviated by Plague Knight being able to feel like a whole new character with the switch of a bomb casing. Though yeah, I did end up using a lot of compound powder. Each new game felt meatier than the one before, with King of Cards as a sumptuous final course, probably eclipsing the original itself in terms of platforming content. They even fit in a card game, which I can't say I engaged much with. My skill is in jumping over pits and bashing bosses, not planning 3 card placements ahead, and the game kept adding so many wrinkles to the system that I never felt I could keep up. As such, it's a bummer that the game takes a leaf from the JRPG playbook and locks the ultimate secret boss behind this minigame. I could probably take on this boss, but I can't take on the cards. The game's stories were still all charming, with Plague Knights being my favorite because I'm a romantic sap at heart. Ultimately, my only major gripe was with the ending of King Knight's story, not because of the conclusion itself, but rather because the prequel nature of the game precludes closure to King Knight's supporting cast. What I'm saying is, I still want to see King Knight's mom smack some sense into her jerk son. This is an expertly crafted portfolio of platformers, where even the many delays ended up working to their advantage. Taken all at once, the asset reuse might have become grating, but spaced out, the games instead invoke a cozy familiarity akin to new seasons of a beloved TV show. And the fact that I got them all for free just for buying the original at a sale years ago is the icing on the cake. The value prospect is so big, I almost feel guilty. I agree about the King Knight thing. King Knight's mom is a great character. And the ending of that campaign is surprisingly sad, because he just kind of thrusts off all of these people who have helped him this entire time, because, you know, you have to get him to the place where he is in the beginning of Shovel Knight, which is to say alone in his castle with a bunch of jerks around him. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm
sad.
Disappointed in King Knight's attitude at the end of that campaign.
Yeah, he's a jerk.
Yeah.
But anyway, and our final piece of correspondence is from Super User from the forum. This is the one that I believe came from before the delay. Shovel Knight is a straight 10 out of 10. I'd grade Plague Knight a solid 8.5 out of 10. But Spectre, that honestly gets an 11 out of 10. These are all close to being standalone games, and I wouldn't mind them being offered in that way. However, I think it's important to see them as one cohesive package and play in release order to get the most out of them. Plague gives a poor first impression coming in straight from the main game, as I did. The titular character feels more sluggish than Shovel Knight and lacks his charisma and heart, though you grow fonder of him as the game goes on. It also never gets old to bully your minions. The bomb system is poorly explained, and I didn't experiment almost at all till the end, where, as usual, I grinded early levels for money to buy all the upgrades. It took me very long to get used to his control scheme and equipment. I now see the genius of the controls, but I must hold this against the expansion. I wish I was encouraged further in some way to try out more of Plague Knight's equipment instead of playing him like a more sluggish Shovel Knight. The way Plague Knight speaks is initially off-putting as he's just so awkward and strange, but the introduction to your secret lab is a brilliant experience, and interacting with your brain-dead minions is often hilarious. I saw the twist near the end coming, but it was still heartwarming and very welcome. It wrapped up beautifully and left a smile on my face. I just wish the game explained itself better and gave me more time to get to grips with controlling Plague Knight. Spectre Knight is pure awesomeness. While the character is introspective and brooding, his controls make him the ninja of Shovel Knight and one of the best controlling characters of any platformer. The level design has been changed up a lot this time around, and there are so many surprises in the end going into what I can only describe as Spectre Knight's pro skater. Spectre Knight brings a sense of speed to the franchise. The better you are, the faster you move, and you don't need to be a speedrunner either. I'm actually pretty bad at all these games. I put this down mainly to Spectre Knight's attacks, styles, and power, meaning you can make quick work of a lot of enemies once you figure them out. As a whole, levels are designed with speedy platforming in mind. Yacht Club again demonstrates superb game feel in the ever-potent mid-air slash that lets you jump from item to item. It's notable how you have to have some momentum for most maneuvers, which were more straightforward in the first two chapters. The story is played more seriously and unfolds handsomely, though I feel the relationship between you and Reese could have been better established. To my amazement, Yacht Club still pulled it off with their ever-sharp writing. Because of Spectre's dull character, it's the side cast that does most of the heavy lifting this time. I want to give special mention to the brilliant new artwork, particularly the gloomy castle that serves as your base of operations. With these two expansions, Shovel Knight is my all-time favorite game. It's interesting to discuss how we'd feel if these were instead standalone spin-offs and how that would affect our perception. But speaking for myself, I'll still buy each one at full price. It is the perfect platformer. Bring on King of Cards and please do an episode on it when it comes out. Well, good news. Yeah, some very lovely correspondence from our forum. You can go to canemrince.com/forum. And I believe usually about a week in advance, if not more, we have a thread up where you can contribute to possibly be included in the show as well. Another way that you can get included in the show is by leaving a 3-word review either on the forum or on Twitter at canemrince. We usually put out a post the day of, which I forgot until about 2 hours before the recording. So thank you, Josh, for putting that up when I remembered. I allowed multiple 3-word reviews from single people this time because of the situation with multiple different campaigns. So in 3 words, here's what you had to say about these campaigns.
Okay. Super user regarding the Plague Knight campaign says a love story.
Super user on Spectre Knight says skating ninja reaper.
And super user overall, get treasure trove.
Mr. Ixolite about Plague Knight says, blast, bounce, blast. I thought I read that wrong for a second.
Mr. Ixolite on Spectre says, slash, dash, slash.
Mr. Ixolite on King Knight's campaign, bash, bounce, cards?
Mr. Ixolite overall says, treasure trove indeed.
From Twitter, Chris Yo Doom says, best NES game?
Andrew Brown says, comic, tragic, timely.
Riku says, DLC done right.
Tom Hewlett says, greatest Kickstarter success.
And Steve Norman says, keeps on giving.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for your contributions. In summary, we obviously enjoyed this game, but how much did we enjoy it? So I really liked all of the Shovel Knight DLC, and I really liked Shovel Knight as a package. I would recommend that if you are going to play the DLCs, that you maybe not play them in as quick succession as I did. But I think that it's worth going through all of them kind of in the order. As one of our correspondents mentioned, I think that it makes the most sense to kind of see the progression and see how we went from a game that is more or less the same in design to something that is just wholly different, both in design and in gameplay. I think that they are all worth playing, even if I have my favorites, which in this case I think is probably actually King Knight. Although Spectre Knight is pretty close, it did feel very good. I really like the writing and kind of the level design of King Knight. I think maybe edges it out for me. Yeah, it's a game that is easy to get a hold of. It is a game that pretty much no matter what kind of system you have to play games, you can do this if you are so inclined, and I think that you should. I got a lot out of it, and if you like platformers, it's challenging enough to keep your attention, but not usually frustrating enough to give you a coronary. Like, even if you do die 30 times on stupid propeller night by falling into pits, it's still fun. Yeah, that's where I land on it. Josh, Shovel Knight DLC.
Yeah, I mean, I love these DLCs. I think it's so rare that DLC manages to capture what made the original game so great. But not only that, in some ways kind of improve upon certain aspects of the original game as well. I said during the issue that I had my issues with Plague Knight. I think if there's one I would skip, it's probably Plague of Shadows, just because if you've played the original game, you've played those levels with the character who is most suited to those levels, and it just feels a little bit awkward. And part of me really wishes, because Plague Knight as a character is really fascinating, part of me just wishes he was given a campaign that was suited to his skill sets. But Spectre of Torment and King of Cards are exceptional. I think if you love the original campaign, you just have to play these two bits of DLC. You owe it to yourself. I think ultimately Spectre of Torment is my favorite, but it's so close. I think the two of them have very different strengths. Yeah, like you said, Leah, like the comedy and writing in King of Cards is just really like genuinely laugh out loud funny. I'm really excited to see what Yacht Club do next. I know they're experimenting with publishing at the moment, but they have expressed in interviews in the past that they're kind of tired of Shovel Knight now and they want to move on to something new. Great, as far as I'm concerned. We've pretty much got Shovel Knight 2, 3, and 4 through these DLCs, so I'm really happy that they're looking outside of Shovel Knight now and they're going to move on to something new, and whatever that is, I'm really excited to see it, because it's not just this world and these characters, it's this developer. I think Yacht Club games have proven themselves to be really, really competent at this particular genre.
Awesome. Thank you. And ending up with John.
Yeah, I just can't praise pretty much all four of these games enough. I absolutely adored Shovel Knight when it first came out. Each of these DLC campaigns has just been a success as well. I think there are potential pitfalls with the idea of sort of buying this game and just mainlining through the whole lot of it, because I mean they are not short and they are not easy, and I do feel slightly overwhelmed with basically going through all of Spectre Knight and King Knight in the last few weeks. I'm kind of shoveled out a little bit, even though I'm not finished with it, and I'm probably going to continue playing the remainder of King Knight's campaign and feats over the course of the next couple of weeks. But yeah, I mean, as a value proposition, this is just ridiculous. The idea of essentially having four games into one package that I think cost me like between £12 and £15 or something a few years ago. So it's so worth it, and I'm sure that. As it is with everything else, the Switch is probably a perfect platform to play this on while you're on your, well, I was going to say commute, but yeah, we'll forget about that. While you might potentially be on a future commute. But yeah, I just think that, Yacht Club have absolutely nailed it. They nailed the sort of the feeling, the platforming from, you know, the various inspirations that they had all the way back with the original, and each one of these DLC campaigns has kind of just built upon that. And, you know, in, as we say, with Plague Knight, maybe not quite up to the same level of perfection as the more the two more recent ones were, but I mean, they all do at least one thing spectacularly well. And yeah, it's absolutely a, you know, guaranteed recommendation. I'm not sure what Yacht Club will be moving on to. I think they've got another Shovel Knight game announced at the moment, which looks fairly similar.
That's not being developed by them.
Oh, is it not?
No. You're talking about Shovel Knight Dig?
Yes.
I blanked on the name of the developer, but it's being published by them, not developed.
Okay. Well, regardless, I mean, I'm sure Shovel Knight Dig will also be an interesting thing to check out. But I'm very, very keen to see what this team have got, potentially their next, next developed game won't need to rely on Kickstarter. And they've certainly got, the pedigree behind them for a major studio to back it. So, I'd be very interested to see where they come out.
Awesome. All right. Well, then it just remains for me, Leah, to thank Josh and John, as well as our correspondents, our editor, Ryan, and, of course, all of you for listening. Next time in issue 425, it's back to the 80s and back to the arcade with Missile Command.